This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Sprinklers are a typical part of the landscape in Southern California. You can hear them almost any time you take a stroll, in the early morning or in the evening. Even as we enter year two of another drought.
Obviously, if you go around the neighborhood, there's a lot of homes. People have a lot of pride in their lawns and how their homes appear. So
Nick Setyal lives in Windsor Hills, just north of Inglewood. To cut back on water, he's letting his lawn turn brown.
As a citizen, I'm choosing just to let it go a little bit brown. I'm just watering it once a week and making sure the grass is cut.
After a year of measly rainfall, just 5 inches in Los Angeles, way less than half the average, Governor Gavin Newsom is asking you to reduce your water usage by 15%. Now, most of California is in a drought emergency, but you sure can't tell by walking around L.A. Today on Greater L.A., KCRW's Kaylee Wells explains how severe the drought really is and why Southern California appears to be safe for now.
Setyal says he's doing his part to cut back his water usage. But if you look up and down his street, he seems to be one of the only ones. He lives between two homes with that bright neon green lawn, and his front yard sticks out.
I have a soft spot for nice grass and like a well-manicured green area. Having said that, I mean, I'm trying to save the planet here too. So, I mean, my affinity for a well-manicured green baseball field or a well-manicured green lawn probably does not take precedence over the drought we're in and trying to save water.
Apart from his own cutbacks, he notices hardly any signs of drought.
I don't think there's quite the urgency, and the mayor, we haven't had our politicians like step up this time, or just like the voice of the drought hasn't been amplified as much at this point.
It definitely doesn't feel as serious yet as the last drought did a few years ago. Last time, whole neighborhoods let their lawns die. An oil change didn't necessarily come with a complimentary car wash anymore. The Huntington ripped up half their lawn. We were told to run only full laundry loads or try out something called a military shower. That's when you turn off the water while you soap up. And golf courses let their greens go brown.
Obviously, if things become dire enough, we're down to watering, sprinkling the tees and the greens, and the rest of it dies out. We hope we don't get to that. Some places in California in 2016 in the northern part of the state did get to that. And that's just, it's sad, but that's the way it goes.
Craig Kessler with the Southern California Golf Association says that's starting to happen in Northern California again. But so far down here, the golf courses are almost as green as they were when it rained a lot a couple years ago.
Seeing hints of it in parts where it's voluntary, in the sense of browning out the fringes, if you know what I mean, rather than the core, and giving it a better look. And I think most are at the point now just sort of determining or deciding which directions to go.
Some Northern California communities have already issued mandates to cut back water use. Some homeowners have seen their wells run dry. People in Santa Clara are required to reduce water consumption by 15%. Why isn't it as bad here? Well, the last drought went on for 6 years. We're only 2 years into this one. But Alex Hall, the director of UCLA's Center for Climate Science, says this one is just as severe so far, so it could get just as bad down the line.
The question is, going forward, will we continue to have dry years? And that is really what's going to determine the impact of the drought.
He says Southern California has been spared from those restrictions so far because we have an extra buffer down here.
There is a lot of concern about water supplies now, but we haven't quite reached the point of emergency yet. Whereas in Northern California and in many parts of California, they are already dealing with a situation where they don't have enough water to meet their needs.
He says there's a few reasons for that. Southern Californians get their water from multiple sources, the Colorado River, the LA Aqueduct, the Sierra Nevadas. So if one source runs dry, we have other options. Hall says Southern California also relies more heavily on recycled wastewater and groundwater, and we still have mostly full reservoirs after the deluge in 2019. Plus, many of us have kept conserving water after the last drought. Our water usage is 16% lower than it was in 2013. Local officials say Southern Californians have enough to carry us through next year. But Hall says he thinks there should be a statewide mandate to reduce water. The climate is getting drier, and there's no harm in preparing for that now.
It is playing out differently in different places. At the same time, I think in terms of equity, it's good to for people to have a sense of shared sacrifice. And I think it highlights the connection between us and these far-flung water resources that ultimately we all share.
Californians who use a lot of water will find it's easier to cut back this time. Since the last drought, California passed a law that prevents homeowners associations from requiring grass. Yeah, some places actually had that rule. Plus, all those turf replacement programs have been back for a couple years now, so homeowners can get money back for ripping out their grass and replacing it with plants that use less water. But Long Beach homeowner Leanne Ruggeroni says she wishes water restrictions were mandated this time, too.
It's a shame I don't have anything blooming right now, because if you were here in, like...
You don't?
If you were here in April, this was full of a whole bunch of California annuals. It had parkias, and it had poppies, and, you know...
Ruggeroni's got a grape arbor, more than 15 fruit trees. She just gave her extra cucumbers and tomatoes to a neighbor down the street. So growing things is really important to her. Unlike Nick Setyal, she's not browning the yard yet.
I feel it's inconsiderate to let your yard go because so many people are out walking around. And if you wanted to be able to sell your house, you don't want to have your next door neighbor having a house that looks like, you know, a dust bowl. There are a few houses in the neighborhood like that. And, you know, they are an eyesore at this point.
She says she didn't face that pressure when everyone was required to cut back on their water use.
Our lawn didn't stand out just because everybody else was letting their lawns die. It was almost like if there was one house that had a green lawn in the neighborhood, everybody kind of gave them the skunk eye, like, hey, you're using more than your fair share. And, you know, our neighborhood is very tight-knit, and people would gossip. Did you see they had their sprinklers on? Oh, my gosh, and they're watering every day. And so, you know, we were kind of all in it together.
Almost all of California today is in severe drought. But with Newsom's recall election just 2 months away, he says he doesn't want California to become oppressive or a nanny state. Until that state mandate comes, the grass will stay greener down here for now. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
Well, for as many problems a dry California faces, there are just as many solutions, opportunities to rethink how to store and use the rainfall the state is getting and will get. Adaptation.
We have to look at the earth as a living organism, figuring out what nature needs, and then we do our best to try to mimic that.
We're working with Beaver because we want to restore watersheds.
When you bring back the trees, you bring back life and you bring back the underground water.
All the land in the city can be retrofitted to capture water and store it.
Conservation, reuse, and water use efficiency. They are the greatest untapped sources of water in this nation.
In a new documentary, filmmaker Brittany App travels the state to find the people practicing wise water management. It's called Where There Once Was Water. And Brittany is with us right now. Hey, Brittany.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Your name is all over the credits, by the way, from narrating it to producing and directing it, even DPing it. You call this a love story. Why?
Oh, my goodness. I felt the call to make this film amidst a photography project that was documenting the California drought kind of the last time around in 2014. And it's entirely Kickstarter funded, and it's a bare bones, you know, tiny little budget of a feature length documentary film. And this is my first time ever doing such a thing. And so I did as much of it as I possibly could. And the love story piece of it really is, you know, after many iterations of itself, it landed in this beautiful place, which is kind of a call to all of us to find where we fit in this big puzzle, in this big story, and find the ways that we can have a relationship with water and be part of healing, you know, that relationship and the water cycle and relations between all living things.
Your film spends a lot of time talking about groundwater and aquifer replenishment, and this is so fascinating. One possible solution is beavers.
Yeah!
Let's take a listen to this clip.
Unlike giant concrete dams, beaver dams allow water to move slowly and soak in to the landscape, hydrating every living thing along the way.
As far as we understand, there used to be up to 400 million beaver across North America. They're an organism that is trying to protect itself from being preyed upon, and so they either live in existing water bodies, or if they find themselves in a creek or a river, they'll build a dam. And they've evolved to be able to modify the environment more than any other species second to humans.
Talk about this trip to Sonoma County and how people like, this was a woman named Kate Lundquist, who are trying to reintroduce beaver into the environment.
Beaver are amazing. There's a lot of excitement right now, which it gives me goosebumps, around beaver and what they can do for our watersheds here in the state of California, up in Oregon. And Kate Lundquist and the folks at the Occidental Arts and Ecology Center are working to try and get some legislation so that beavers can actually be relocated in the state of California. And where we get into, you know, trouble with it is beaver will show up and they want to stop the flow of water. And so if they do that on your farmland and then flood your fields, then you're not super happy with the beaver, probably, if they're storing water in the wrong place. And so a lot of folks will just kill them. And we want to just let them do their work, but we want to encourage them to do it in the places where it will benefit the ecosystem the most, because the beaver are just a perfect example of us acknowledging that there's already a critter out there doing the work. This is the work we need done the most.
Yeah, you don't even have to pay them, right?
They're doing it for free.
They're doing it for free.
I mean, how much is it going to cost us to, you know, hire engineers to do the work the beaver are out there doing just because they're beaver? I mean, they're just amazing.
Your film looks at other ways to help rainwater soak into the soil. What are some of those ways?
I found in this film that there are methods of agriculture in place that really do focus their efforts on the soil and healing the soil. And if the soil is more alive, it can hold more carbon, it can hold more water. And then you don't need to add water to it. It's fascinating. And that works. You know, I met folks who are doing that on an urban scale, downtown Sacramento, growing food that way in their own backyard. And then I met folks doing that on rangeland scale way up in Northern California with a huge herd of cattle. So it's something we can all, yeah. We're coming back to this as a love story. Like what, you know, what really lights you up?
You mentioned urban areas such as Sacramento, which is a huge watershed. But you also traveled to El Segundo and West Covina here in greater LA, a couple of cities that are trying to clean up their local supply of water rather than to, you know, transport it from the north of the state. Talk about the projects in those cities.
Yeah. So one is a Superfund cleanup, which is basically a, you know, highly polluted site. And this one happens to be groundwater. And so the effort is to pump that groundwater up, clean it up, and serve it to people, as opposed to, like you said, importing from elsewhere.
This is the San Gabriel Valley Water Quality Authority, right? A guy named Ken
Yes,
Manning?
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. The other one has a long name, too. The Edward C. Little Water Recycling Facility in El Segundo. And that is just what it sounds like it is. The partially treated wastewater comes in from Hyperion. And then they further process the water, gosh, through so many stages. It was fascinating to learn what really goes into water recycling, recycling wastewater.
Let's hear from Ken Manning, who you interviewed in your documentary. Here's Ken Manning from San Gabriel.
Nobody in the state of California pays market value for water. If we were, it would be 2 to 3 times the cost it is right now. One way or another, water is going to be more expensive in the future. There's no getting around it. Even if you use less water, your water bill is going to go up significantly.
Now, you talked to Manning and other people, too. Did you get the feeling that the average person won't change their water use habits until it really hits their pocketbook? And we're going to see it, right?
I mean, what, we're human, right? Yeah. What does it take for us to actually change our behavior? I ask myself that in my own personal life. What does it take for me to actually change my behavior? If a thing gets way more expensive and it's a thing that I need, I treat it differently.
And guess who's affected the most by that, right? The people who are least able to afford it.
Right. And so this, what I found making this film too, is there could be 500 films about water, at least, just in California. Yeah. Another piece of it is who is getting the biggest subsidies and why, and is that really serving us? And how can we help those who don't have the means to still have access to clean drinking water? Because clean drinking water is, and if it's not, it should be, a human right. Not every human being needs to water their golf course, right? But we all need to be able to drink clean water. So we, I think, are entering a time where we will be forced to really think about this and probably restructure the way that we're doing things. And, you know, ask our beaver friends how to do this best, I guess.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time and for your documentary. Brittany App, the director behind the film Where There Once Was Water, Stories from California. And by the way, a lot of parts of California. It's an interesting watch. Thanks so much for talking with us, Brittany.
Oh, Steve, thank you.
Moving on now with our show, our Greater LA show, about California's record-breaking drought and how it's affecting lives. One big aspect of your relationship to water is centered on what you eat. Food needs water to be planted and to grow. Food needs water to be cleaned and prepared and eaten. Water is part of almost every aspect of the farm-to-table supply chain. So, when it comes to conserving water, how can you eat things that use less water? Author Florencia Ramirez wrote a book called Eat Less Water, and she's here to tell us how. Florencia, welcome to you.
Hi. Hi. Wonderful to be here.
Yes. Let's start with the basics. What's the easiest way to literally eat less water?
Well, to eat less water means to really be engaged with how your food is being produced. So when I first started thinking about this, I actually was starting with my water conservation kind of story began in the shower. So thinking about it the way we normally think around droughts is take shorter showers, it's to stop watering your lawns, it's to, you know, all of those things that they recycle every time a drought comes, as we're in now. So I started to really think about how could I take shorter showers, and I ended up selling shower timers and sold 80,000 of them. And when I had this conversation with people around saving water, you know, I would talk about, you know, if you were to shorten your shower by 4 minutes in 1 year, you could save 2,500 gallons of water. And I find out that we here in the United States eat anywhere between 530 to 1,300 of gallons of water every day. So here I am talking about how important it is to take shorter showers, and not to say that that's still not important, but I'm telling you, you can save 2,400 gallons in 1 year, but yet you can save that amount of water in a meal. So that's when I started to think about eating less water, and then became the question, well, what do I do then? So then became this kind of, I guess, a journey for me that took 7 years of visiting with farmers around the country. In California is where I began, but this is not just a California story. This is a world story, right? Because we're looking at water scarcity to be felt by half the population by 2030, which is a scary statistic, but I am focused on, well, what are the solutions and how can I partner with those solutions and grow those solutions and grow well-being on this planet? And it really comes down to who are you partnering with when you buy your food? And for me, that means going to the farmers market and talking to small-scale farmers to understand how they're growing food, how they are saving water because they're using organic practices. But when I go to the farmers market or even to the market and I buy the strawberries, for example, that have that organic seal, or go to the farmers market and ask questions to find out if it was grown without pesticides, that strawberry, even though it still has the same water footprint, which is a few gallons per strawberry, it is using what's called green water, more green water, which is water that's coming from the sky and moisture, because that soil has the capacity to hold more water than a field that's been treated with chemicals.
If you're somebody who's trying to be, conscious about, because look, we're in a time now where inflation has pretty much everything pricier than it was even a year ago or 2 years ago. If you're trying to save money, but you're trying to do the right thing, how do you jibe those things? If you're trying to eat less water, but in order to eat less water, it's going to cost you a heck of a lot more. How do you do that?
Well, you know where you can start, and without even buying a single organic thing, is to not waste so much food. We waste anywhere between 30 to 50% of our food here in the United States. And I know every single week I'm always trying to figure out ways of how I can reduce my waste. So even if you didn't do anything in terms, like, organic is kind of the next step, really. The first step is, how do you reduce waste? It means, like, for me, that means planning meals so I know exactly what I need to buy. It means organizing my kitchen so that I'm not losing food, in the process. And, we each waste about $1,800. And I think for most of us, it's even more than that, $1,800 of food each year. So that right there alone would make a huge difference if we just stop wasting so much food, because everything that we throw away has a water footprint. If you're throwing away a loaf of bread, for example, because it got lost in the refrigerator, that's 400 gallons of water that it took to grow the wheat to create that loaf of bread. So that's one of the things. The other thing is that this is not about being perfect. It's not about suddenly everything in my cabinet needs to be organic or everything needs to come from the farmer's market. That's too heavy. And we all have so many other things that we're trying to do. But if you could do just a little bit more than what you're doing now, and your neighbor's doing a little bit more, and that there is power in the collective. And we've certainly have seen this during the pandemic, when each of us is doing just a little bit more of how we see the numbers of how many people were infected with COVID drop. And it's the same thing with this, just each of us doing a little more than what we can, that what we're doing, more as much as our budget allows to do, us to do, then it will make a huge impact on water systems around the world.
Before we let you go, Florencia, I want to ask you, is there a drought-friendly recipe you could share? The summer months are here, you're getting hotter. what can you do to help eat less water in a drought-friendly recipe?
I think right now it's really about eating what's in season. So now it'd be like tomatoes, for example, stone fruit, eating lower on the food chain. So, if you're eating meat, make sure it's not factory farmed. Just that thing alone was huge. So, I would say for this summer, it's fresh and it's so tasty just to have that wonderful salad and toss it with some stone fruit and make your own vinaigrette, which I do. And it's just delicious on any kind of vegetable for this summer.
Florencia Ramirez, author of Eat Less Water. Florencia, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, let's take a trip to another country, shall we? You don't need a passport, only your eyes and ears and imagination. A new exhibition And El Segundo looks at California as if it were all by itself. That's tomorrow on the show. Go online. Check us out at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Check out the stories of the day. And, of course, you're able to simply and easily subscribe to the podcast, kcrw.com/greaterLA, or grab it wherever you get your podcasts. Jenna Cagle, Jackie Sedley, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Sue Margulies, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, and Christian Bordahl all had hands and ears on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thank you for your time and attention this evening. Have a great night.